You are now tuned in from the Desk of Low, brought to you by from the That Feeling Podcast Network. If you have a dream, go get it.
Welcome back from the Desk of Low. We have, like, a very talented producer. He actually produced one of my favorite records, Room 39. So if you guys already know that record, you know who I got on the phone with me. So I won't make the introduction super long because we'll get into everything that he's ever done. I have Trox on the phone.
What's good, man? Hello, how you doing, man? You good?
Man, I'm doing good, man. How are you doing, sir?
Man, I cannot complain at all, man. Some big things are happening very soon.
Man, big things been happening for you, though.
Yeah, you know, it happened, definitely, man. But, this is something different, man. Like, I just have a really good feeling about life right now. Things are gonna happen.
So, yeah, we'll get into all that. We'll get into everything that you got invited to later on in the show. But I want to actually ask you the question first. You seem like you were born in my era. You were born in 91?
I was born in 89, actually.
Okay, so not too far off from me, just only 2 years before.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, was Trox always your producer name, and why the name Trox? Because when I did my research on you, like, no one ever asked you that when I did listen to the interviews I listened to.
Yeah, so basically, man, like, Troxel is my last name, and everybody has called me Trox before the whole music thing, so it kind of just stuck with me, you know what I mean?
Okay, so it's like you never really wanted to go outside of, like, what people, so your name was actually given to you.
Yeah, the name was given to me long before I was born, so it's like, I mean, I might as well just be myself, you know what I'm saying? I'm not really trying to be anybody else.
Exactly, too. And I noticed, too, like, you said that in an interview that you were on Fruity Loops way before all these kids. Now, I'm wondering, what are you using now?
So I use Machine. That's, like, the boss of, like, my operation. I make my beats on Machine, and then I polish everything off on Logic, and I use, you know, some hardware pieces here and there every now and then. But for the most part, it's Machine and Logic. So, I'm pretty much software-based these days.
So I'm wondering, too, because you're very big in the Portland scene right now, and I'm wondering, I haven't been put onto the Portland scene very much. The only person I actually know from Portland is you, to be honest.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Oh, man, there's tons of talent here, man. Like, nah, there's a lot of talent in Portland. There's not a lot of, institutions that can, like, really, like, help Portland shine on a worldwide basis, if you know what I mean. My man Starchild, rest in peace, definitely he had those intentions, you know what I'm saying? We actually threw a monthly called Mic Check. Mic Check is still going on. It's a quarterly, it's about to be a bi-monthly now. We're about to pick it back up. He hosted it. I was the DJ. But now, you know, since he passed away, unfortunately, rest in peace. We have two DJs now. His partner, OG1, the DJ of the Trailblazers, we both, we trained off on the decks back and forth. Oh. And our guy, DJ Cliff, hosts it. So, yeah, man.
So,
Mic Check is definitely still going on.
What would you say when you first decided to be a producer? Was this the time when you got your turntables around 7th grade, if I got my facts straight?
I did get my turntables around 7th grade, but I really wanted to make music around 6th grade. I really didn't know how to get into it. All I was doing at that time was just reading liner notes of, like, oh, who produced this and, like, who did this and that. Like, I became a super nerd about that. The album that got me into it was Dr. Dre, 2001. Like, when that came out, that was around 99. That was the year that made me decide that I wanted to get into making beats. So I get my turntables in 2007. I get a bootleg copy of Fruity Loops. Not even a bootleg copy. It was like a demo version, right? So to make my beats, to like actually like save my work, I had to like finish the beat from start to finish. I couldn't even save the session.
Oh.
So, yes. So If I quit, like, mid-process, like, I lose the beat forever, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I had to create it from start to finish and save the MP3. I would never be able to get the files or anything. couldn't even send the session. I could bounce the MP3 though. So yeah, that's where I came from, man. Making beats from start to finish all in one setting.
Do you still have that mentality, or do you kind of take your time with it now?
I mean, I kind of take my time with it now. Like, my process these days is I make a beat on machine. That can take me anywhere from, like, 5-10 minutes to, like, 45 minutes. And then bounce the files out and then polish it off on Logic, you know. Add stuff to it, sequence it, take things out. Yeah. That's how I flush my ideas out.
Yeah, because what drew me to your sound and what made me really want to, like, listen to your production a lot more was, I know you get hit up about this project all the time, Room 39, but the song that sold me, like, was the North Korea Crack Rock. So I was like, when I heard that beat, I was like, holy, that was some next level shit. I'm wondering, when you're making a beat like that, what is the process behind that? Like, do you watch any kind of, like, mob flicks or anything like that before watching something like that?
I'll watch a movie from time to time, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes I'll keep something on the laptop while I'm making a beat on the iMac. But really, for the most part, I actually just have, like, a clean slate around. Like, I'll hear a sample, right? And then I let that dictate what goes on in my head, and then I put what's in my head into my machine.
Oh.
So it's really just, everything's in my head, really.
So you hear the beat before you actually make it?
Yeah, man, pretty much.
Okay, because like this is my theory too, and I notice a lot of people are starting to catch on to this theory too. The producer deserves just as much shine as the artist, if not more, because they're the ones making the beat you're bobbing your head to.
Oh, 100%. I agree with that.
All right. Well, at least you know. I knew you would agree with that. So one of the albums I wanted to talk to you about and what it means to you is 4-5-6.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. That's one of my favorite albums of all time. Man, first of all, let's listen to Cool G Rap. Just him in general. He has never had a weak verse on anything. Like,
That's facts. Beanie Siegel verse.
He's never had a weak verse on anything. That's something bucket list for me one day. I want, if it's just one song, I want to do some shit with him one day. But it's the production around his lyrics on 4-5-6. It just created like a movement in your head whenever you listen to it. You know what I mean? Who was handling production on that? It was like The Butcher. Buck Wild had a couple.
Digging in the crates right there. Yeah, Digging in the crates. Some crazy beats back then too. They still do, but back then, whoo.
Oh man, nah. Buck Wild did Mass Life.
Yes, sir.
That shit was fucking amazing to me. But like, yeah, it was like literally like listening to Scarface on a CD or an MP3 or however you listen. It's just an incredible album, man. It's definitely part of the blueprint of what I do.
Do you still listen to that album daily?
Semi-daily, yeah. I love that fucking album.
Well, when you get the chance to.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. Especially around this time. It's wintertime. It's definitely a wintertime album, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the weather down there. It's freezing up here.
Man, it's not terrible right now. It's just cloudy and like 45.
Oh, okay. Well, it's better than here, man. It's like minus 35 down here.
Bro, where are you here? You said you're in Montreal?
No, I'm in Calgary, Alberta. So I'm in West Canada.
Oh, Calgary. Okay, yeah. My man, Will Brown, he's in Chicago, man. Like, Chicago was getting like negative 7 or something. I'm like, bro, I am never living in Chicago ever in my life.
Yeah, Chicago looking pretty bad right now with the weather. So you kind of, this is like kind of like when I listened to this interview by you, I'm trying to figure out which one it was, but you found a song through Grand Theft Auto Vice City, and I'm wondering, how much music did you find throughout the Grand Theft Auto series? Because I found a lot of music throughout the Grand Theft Auto series when I was a teenager.
Oh man, I definitely found a lot of music through video games in general. You know, like Tony Hawk, Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, Tony Hawk. Dave, oh, yeah, that's a good, my G.
Oh, man. Dave Mirrors, Kobe, and Meg Westerke, Dave Mirror. Yeah, man. Nah, I found a lot of music for video games, man. I was heavily into video games back in the day. So, like, a lot of my musical knowledge came from that.
I can definitely, you can definitely tell too, like, this is a question, because, like, I'm big onto video games too, and people say, you know, when they find, like, a lot of music through video games, have you ever played Jet Set Radio?
Of course I've played Jet Set Radio.
You'd be surprised how much people said they did not play that game.
Oh, man, come on, that's a classic now. That's our generation right there, man.
They're missing out on that game with the graffiti, and I remember, that's how I found Jurassic 5, I won't lie.
Oh, man. Oh, that. How did I find Jurassic 5? I think that was, like, some local hip-hop show that I found about. I was living in Eugene at the time. Eugene, Oregon, which is, like, 2 hours south of Portland. It's where University of Oregon's at. But, yeah, how did I find out about Jurassic 5? I think it was either through a video game or it was through a local show. I can't remember. But, yeah, it was definitely around that era, for sure.
Do you go back and, like, hear, like, a certain sample of a video game and, like, try to sample it or try to, like, rework it so you can make it, like, your own sound? Like Metroid. I noticed, like, Metroid has a lot of people could sample if they could sample it right. Because, like, it takes talent to sample, I won't lie.
Yeah, it definitely does. I've tried to sample some Zelda before. I don't think I quite got it down yet, but, because I already know Sid Rohn's, I mean, I'm not actually going to put them on blast, never mind. I know a certain producer for a certain artist has already flipped Zelda, and I'm like, I don't know if I can do that now, man.
Yeah, it's like, maybe you should have left it.
Right, yeah, I'll leave that one alone. But I know that I sampled some video games, I just can't remember which one. I tried to sample some Doom, and it didn't work. You remember that game, Doom?
Yeah. Actually, for what?
Yeah,
one?
I tried.
For, like, the...
Yeah, I tried.
So, would you, like, for, like, Doom 2, like, what would you say is your favorite style of video games? Like, shooting, platforming, or RPG?
Man, right now, I've been into fighting games, man. Like, you know, Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, even Super Smash Brothers. I've been playing Super Smash Brothers Ultimate all the time right now, man.
Yeah, facts, me too, man. I'm real good of Kirby.
I roll with Donkey Kong or Captain Falcon. One of those two. If I want speed, I go Captain Falcon. If I want strength, if I want somebody well-rounded, I go Donkey Kong, man. Donkey Kong is pretty much, you know, my go-to.
Now you keep it, like, with the originals, too. I'm wondering, when was the first time you ever played, like, the first Smash? Did you? Because I got into it on Melee. I didn't even play the N64 until, like, years after.
I definitely got into it when it first came out. Like, that was my shit. Melee was dope, too. I think my stepbrother still got it, too. I might have to hit him up.
Hey, get that classic going. Leave you that GameCube on for 72 hours to unlock Mewtwo.
Yeah, hell yeah, man. Nah, he still got the GameCube, man. We might have to go in on that.
So, when you're, like, because I noticed you're all the way in Portland, too, and you met Ty Ferris through Twitter, too, if I'm not mistaken, too. Did you know of his history before you actually started doing music with him?
The crazy thing is, I wasn't actively aware of his history until I found out he was 2 Flame and 440 Flame of Purple Gang. Like, I didn't even know that was him.
Yeah, I had to tell him that too.
It's kind of crazy, right?
Because you listened to that Searching for Jerry Garcia album as a teen, like how I did too.
Oh, definitely. I definitely did. And I didn't even realize that was him on that album until he told me. I'm like, oh, damn, that was you?
And it's kind of crazy how it all connects too, because, like, you work real closely with Ty Ferris.
Oh, man, that's my brother, man. We got another album coming out very soon. It's crazy right now, man. I can't wait for y'all to hear it.
So when you guys actually get into the studio together, too, like, because I noticed, like, he's in Detroit and you're in Portland, too. When you guys were sending music back and forth, like, when was the first time you guys, like, ever recorded together, like, in the same room together?
the first time we ever recorded music together while we were in the same room was actually in 2017.
Oh, so recently.
After Room 39 came out. After Room 39 came out. Seriously. It was December 2017. We were recording at my man Samurai's crib. He lives in Brooklyn now. And we're just working on things for this next project. And then the only other time after that was I was making beats in front of him in Brooklyn at my man DJ Soko's crib. That's my manager. It's also his manager, too. We both have the same manager. I made some beats in front of him, and one of them ended up being the intro to No Cosign, Just Cocaine Volume 2.
That's fire project, too. I be bumping on the regular.
Oh, man. That's a great project, man. Both No Cosign, Just Cocaines are just... That's just him just going off, man. He's really... He's coming from cat's heads right now. I'm loving what I'm hearing from.
Even that rider music, too, I still be bumping, too. Like it's just like, when you're working with an artist of that high level of lyrical caliber, what's that feeling like when you heard Room 39 complete? Like when you placed a track here and here and here, what was that feeling like when you listened to that whole album in its entirety when it was finished, mixed, and mastered?
It was very relieving, man. We put a lot of years into that project, bro. Like I think we started working on that project in like 2013, I want to say.
Really?
It came out. Yeah, it came out in 2017. We had like 70 joints recorded, and then we nailed it. We narrowed it down to, you know, what we have now.
So
it was, yeah. Go ahead.
That would explain the long track list, then.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It took us a long time to record that, man. It was so relieving when we decided we had a finished album. I'm like, thank God we can put this shit out now.
But 3 years to make that project, though, and because you can tell that project will last through the test of time because, man, that music is timeless. Right? Those beats hit hard. Harder than most producers.
Hey, man. Hey, I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
Nah, I'm going to fry. Keep it a buck on the show.
Definitely, man. Definitely. I appreciate that.
Oh, no worries, my G. So when you say you got, like, over 70 tracks for that album, too, because this is my curiosity as a fan from the outside perspective, do you have, like, a playlist of all those songs that didn't make the album and you just listen to that to yourself, like, as like, you know, just a little playlist for yourself that the world will never hear? You just keep that to yourself?
Yeah, I definitely do. For pretty much all the unreleased music that I have, really, I have hundreds of songs that have never come out, that are probably never going to come out. There's this one joint, I think he's going to put it out, Ty. It's basically this one beat that I made in like 2013, 2012. It's really just like this loop, this jazz loop. And he's telling a story over it. I'm like, yo, you need to put this out and you need to make a video out of it. I'm not going to say what it's called. I don't want to get in trouble.
We don't want you to get in trouble either.
But yo, he's telling this crazy ass story behind it. And it's like, yo, people need to hear this. Like, this shit is nuts.
So, like, and other than that, too, like, that's what I was always curious about, too. Like, do you go back and, like, hear certain sound that, like, yo, I can fix this, and you actually go back and fix it, or you just kind of leave it the way it is?
I kind of just leave it the way it is unless we're actually cutting a record to the beat. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, if it's an old beat that I hear, and it's like, I can do this beat differently. Like, oh, I can add some stuff to it. I'm like, nah, man. If anything, I'll just reach out that sample and just make a whole nother beat out of it.
Okay, so it's kind of like inspiration to you.
Yeah, pretty much, man. You know, it's just whatever comes to my head.
Because you're a producer, too. I'm curious, too, on how big your vinyl collection is.
You know what? It's not as big as it used to be, man. I think right now I got about 10 crates of vinyl, It used to be like 20, but like I sold half my collection just because I wasn't really using it anymore. I used everything, you know, in those records. So I'm like, why do I have them?
Yeah, you made sure you put them to good use before you got rid of them.
Yeah, definitely. I like to cycle through my. Collection. Like records I don't like that I've sampled already, but I don't really care about keeping. I'll just take them back to the record store, get some money out of them, and just buy new records.
This is a question that I keep asking all my guests too, because I'm still looking for that record too on vinyl, cassette, and CD. You ever come across the Internal Affairs vinyl?
Yo, I actually have not. That is a great question. Yo, I have not seen that shit anywhere here. And you know it's out of print because of fucking Simon Says, so it's like, good luck finding that one, man.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man, every market that comes up, man, I hit it just looking just for that vinyl, cassette, or CD.
Yeah, man, it's out of print. It's been out of print since, like, 99, so it's like,
And, like, you can buy it online, that. But I'm not trying to buy, like, something that I don't even know if it's authentic for, like, $400. Like, I need to see it, hold it, and everything before I'm buying that.
Oh, hell no, man. You don't want that, man. Yeah, definitely, I definitely prefer buying records from record stores than online. Just because, you know, you never know what you're going to get, you know what I'm saying? Unless you trust the guy that's selling you the record, I mean, you never know what you're going to get, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I don't fuck with eBay, I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, dude, I've bought records off eBay before. Some people, you know, only from people that I trust, though.
Yeah, I bought you really records have to know the person you're buying from.
Yeah, my man Vander Slice, shout out to him, man. He sold me a few records, you know. Whenever he puts records on eBay, he hasn't done that in years, but whenever he puts records on eBay, you know, I'm like, I trust the condition. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't bullshit me. So, it's really about who you buy from, man. It's all about who you trust.
Well, mind you, back then, I was buying stuff on eBay when the MySpace days was coming out. Well, I was trying to get all those game mixtapes going at G. I remember I bought the Stop Snitching record mixtape. And you know how those mixtapes used to have, like, that real authentic cover? This guy printed it off the computer and everything. I'm like, nah, that's not it. That's not the right one.
Oh, hell no. Did you really do that?
Yeah, he printed the CD and everything. Like, it was definitely, because I had the Ghost unit. I still have the Ghost unit one. So I compared the two. I'm like, this ain't it.
Right. I mean, at this point, man, you just got to take it as a lesson learned. You know what I mean?
Exactly, too. Because you're very in tune to the underground. And I noticed that, like, I'd be trying to, like, tell people, and they don't really, like, some go and listen. But I noticed that people our age, they don't really want to listen to lyrics. And I know that you listen to the underground scene. I'm wondering, like, who do you listen to as of right now?
Right now, as far as like that underground scene, I really like Lil Edo. Lil Edo's real dope, like Willie the Kid, Dark Low, like all those cats that Zito and I'm working with, man, those dudes is dope as fuck. Of course, Rock Marciano, Griselda, cats like them, Mach Hami, Mayhem Loren. I like to, you know, diversify my palate. You know what I mean?
Have you?
Go ahead. There's this other cat that I listen to. I actually met him in Atlanta. His name is Deontay Hitchcock. That kid is nice. I like him a lot.
I may have to check that guy out, actually.
Yeah, he's dope. Check him out, man. He's ridiculous.
Have you heard of Flea Lord?
Yes, actually I have. He actually opened up for Conway with my man Ricky Mapes, who I'm actually doing a project with. Yeah, I fuck with Flea Lord, man. He got some shit.
And shout out to Flea and Ito. They both appeared on the show. They're good people.
Oh, word. Dope. I'm going to have to tune in to that.
Oh, yes, don't worry. By the time this airs, the Edo interview would be out, though, but the Flea Lord interview is already out, though.
Dope. I'm a peep as soon as we're done.
All right, my dear. And then also, we get off the phone, too. I'll also send you something, too.
Dad, please do, man. Please.
Because I appreciate, like, people who make real, authentic hip-hop and stuff like that. And, like, I notice with your beats, too, like, You put a lot of time into your beats, too. When you produce for an artist like 50 Cent, like, did you tell your parents about that?
I did, actually. You know what I mean? At that point, they were already pretty much supporting me in what I was doing. So, like, I gave them the news. Yo, actually, I'll tell you a story. So, how I first found out that I got that record with 50, the first one, I was sound checking. I was DJing for a show. I was sound checking, and I couldn't answer my DMs in time. Gray McKenzie was trying to hit me up, trying to get my number, and I didn't even respond to like an hour after he sent the DM. He's like, "Yo, long story short, you're on the 50 project. Hit me when you can." And I'm like, "Oh, shit." So, you know, I handle my business. I try to keep it on the low, but the cat jumped out of the bag as soon as I could announce it.
And oh, then, yeah, it would have doubted.
Yeah, my man Calvin Valentine, who was also DJing at that show, he announced that I had a record with 50, and the whole crowd was looking at me like cheering me on and shit. I'm like, yo, I've never had that kind of feeling before. You know what I mean? Like, that shit was crazy.
Was it, because I noticed you produced a couple for him, was it the You Took My Heart on the Big Ten, or was it the Murder by Five project, the tracks End Why I Leave My Lights On?
Oh, that was, that one in particular was You Took My Heart. Those two joints on Five Murder by Numbers, that was like 6 months later.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I remember he was hyping that Murder by Fives as his fifth project on Shady Aftermath back then.
Yeah, it ended up being a mixtape. I really don't know what happened. I don't know what happened with that, but, you know, life goes on.
You know how label politics are back then, too.
Yeah, oh, definitely. But definitely. I learned that shit the hard way, man.
But it's still the fact, though, like, the Big Ten, like, I still got that on my playlist.
Oh, man, I still bug it, too. My man, Jake One had a real hard joint on there called Body On It.
Oh, yeah, that was how Barty on that shit. Oh,
man, that shit was amazing, man. Jake One's one of my favorite producers out there, man. Shout out to him.
Oh, actually, mine too. Shout out to Jake One, too. My favorite album by him is White Van Music.
Yeah, White Van Music is hard. I like the Freeway album he did, Stimulus Package.
Oh,
that shit was amazing.
Yo, that was fire. Shout out to Freeway, too. Good people.
Yeah, definitely.
And shout out to Petey Crack, too, also appeared on the show. Good people. I know you're listening.
Oh, dope. Hell yeah, dope.
Yeah, I won't toot my own horn, though, but, like, I just got into podcasting, and, like, all of these people who I got to interview, like, Buckshot or King Crooked or General Steel or Raz Kaz, like, it really bugs me out that I still did all that, too. But, like, honestly, though, my heart is with the underground, because, like, I don't know if you ever heard that quote by 50 Cent when he said, "When Main Street didn't work, I hit the underground with a plan."
Yeah, pretty much, man.
So
that's the way you gotta look at it.
Well, and because I noticed that every great artist had some kind of underground legacy before they actually like broke out too. When you got the invite for Revenge of the Dreamers 3? Was that the first time you ever got to work with, like, the Dreamville people?
So, my introduction to the Dreamville camp was my man Big Doe. Shout out to Big Doe. He used to manage his little brother. He manages this artist named Loot on Dreamville. And prior to that, I did two records with Loot. They're not out yet, but yeah, I did some work with him. So, Doe was working with my manager and this dude, Jermaine, one of the A&Rs over there. They got me an invite over there. And, like, I saw that, like, God, okay, there's another crazy story behind this. So,
I wanted to ask you.
So, the week I got that invite, man, like, my laptop crashed, and I knew that it was mandatory to cook on the spot there.
Yeah.
So, as soon as I got word that I was invited, I went right to the Mac store to get my laptop fixed. Turns out, it was not fixable because it was a battery, a hard drive and a video card. The video card fucked everything up. So I'm like, fuck. I'm like pissed right now. I'm trying to like swing at somebody. My manager calmed me down. Shout out to Soko. We found a MacBook Pro on Craigslist for like $275. And luckily, it was somebody that I knew that was selling it to me. I went to high school with this girl. So I'm like, all right, what? This is meant to be. So yeah.
You know it's not stolen or anything. You know it's actually hers.
Yes, I know it's actually hers. She's kind of a square, so it's, you know, I trust her. So I fly standby to Atlanta, you know what I'm saying? Just, you know, all my bills paid, so I'm broke as fuck, right? I get there. I go there the day I go to the studio the day after at 1:30. You know what I'm saying? I'm cooking with Luke. You know, this shit is all good over here. You know what I mean? You know, just meeting cats. Like, yo, everybody was there, bro. Like, everybody, like, almost everybody that met, man, was there. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, I seen. Know, oh, I seen.
Yeah, I think everybody's seen it. So, we're playing beats in front of, like, No ID and, like, all these guys. I'm like, yo, I'm kind of feeling some pressure right now just because No ID is right there.
Yeah, 444 Project, so, crazy.
Yeah, oh yeah, but you know, he's done more than that. That guy's like executive vice president of labels and shit, so it's like, oh shit, it's a lot of pressure. But the last day with them, like, I set up in the lounge. So if you're an underdog at one of these rap camps, the best place to be is at the lounge because they have a setup there where you can just plug and play, right?
Okay.
So I plug my shit in, I'm making beats. I'm on my third one. I'm like 10 minutes into this beat. And like all of a sudden, I'm hearing like Ari Lennox singing in the background. And then, you know, all these artists are rushing to her to help with the idea, you know, Buddy, Earth Gang, all these people. You know, me and Doc from Earth Gang are having a good conversation about music and music technology and all that. I'm showing them the plugins I'm using. Hours later, we're cutting the record upstairs. And towards completion of the record, like, the studio's packed. Everybody's having a good time, drinking and smoking. We're, like, recording skits on the way, too. Like, we're just having a fucking blast. And it was the last day, so everybody's celebrating. So just being in that room, being the producer of that record, just making, just, like, just the guy, knowing that I made the beat, like, that was a great feeling. Just, you know, I gave everybody a vibe in that building. You know what I mean?
And it's incredible because, like you see everybody vibing out there. It's like, yo, I made that. That people are feeling it.
Yeah, man. There's a lot of heads in there too, man. And they're all just vibing, man. It was a good feeling.
Would you say, like, in 5 to 10 years that everybody will still be talking about the sessions to that album that's not even released yet?
Oh, I think so. It really felt like, you remember that XXL cover with all them rappers on it, like after the East Coast, West Coast, East? You remember
yeah.
that shit?
Yeah, they were, and you had to fold it out just to see everybody.
Yeah, it felt kind of like that, man. I feel like that right there, that is, it's that kind of legendary. You know what I'm saying?
Wow. That and plus you got to remember too, that was just a picture with y'all were a part of. Y'all actually put that on wax.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I hope that record lands somewhere. Everybody that's heard it loves it, so I hope it lands somewhere.
And then, you know, the price is going up too.
Oh, absolutely. The price been going up.
For somebody who got to, because this is, like, probably one of my all-time favorite labels. Actually, I think it is my all-time favorite label. You actually got to go there. How did you experience at Aftermath Studios? And what did you get there invited for? Was it with Focus?
How I got in with Aftermath, I did a record with this guy, Jake Tinder, way back, it was like 2012. And at that time, he was managed by a guy named Todd Cannon, who is now the head of A&R at Aftermath. So, once we did the record, we put it out. Todd follows me on social media, and he's like, yo, I'm a fan. I love your music. I'm like, dope. Thank you, man. Appreciate that. Lo and behold, months later, he gets a job at Aftermath, and he's like, yo, send me records. I'm like, Roger that. I'm fucking up. Why am I not sending
ASAP.
Like, so I keep on sending this guy beats. I'm in L.A. one time. I let him know I'm in L.A. He's like, yo, you should come through. I'm with my man Nasha and my man Paperboy Fade, both, you know, fellow producers, good friends of mine, family. And, yeah, we walk in there. I meet Focus for the first time, Cardiac and all those dudes for the very first time. I'm literally the only guy in that room without a plaque of any kind.
Oh, really?
So
the pressure must have really been on then.
Yeah, pressure was on. But, I just had to press play. That's all I had to do. So, Focus wanted to hear some shit. So I'm like, I'm playing like 20 beats. And I'm like, all right, I feel good. And then Cardiac plays something fucking incredible. And then I'm like, oh, I got to step my game up.
It's like, whoa, what was that?
Yeah, it was one of those things. I'm like, you know what? It was a reminder that I had to grow. You know what I'm saying? I had to grow. I had to get better.
One of my favorite projects by you is Ugly Sweaters, too. I was actually bumping that on Friday.
Oh, word. Oh, man. I I had a blast doing that one.
I'm wondering.
Yeah, I got a story about that one, too.
Oh, okay, go ahead. I'll let you tell your story, because I also have a question about the title, too, but we can get into the story first.
Oh, no, please. Yeah, ask away, man. Ask away. I'm here.
Why the name Ugly Sweaters for that album?
I really wanted to make a Christmas album.
Oh, okay.
It was my Christmas album, right? So I was trying to put it out on Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, I forgot. I was mixing and mastering that album with the flu, a stomach flu.
Oh, that's no fun.
Oh, dude, it was all bad. It was so bad. That was like the worst Christmas ever. And then my car broke down the same week.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it was all bad, man. But, you know, it was a good piece of work. You know what I mean? Like, everybody came with it. The beats were dope. Like, it was really just like a Christmas-themed EP with some tracks that was laying around. I decided to throw them on. Like, it was really wasn't too much of rhyme or reason behind the project. I just wanted to put some music out and label it Christmas music.
Christmas is my favorite time of the year, so maybe that's why I like that project so much. Because I found that project... I found that project January or December. Because I remember I was looking up Chalk's beats after when I got into... Like, I was on the Room 39 phase, like, every day I was that album. Like, Jesus Christ.
Oh, man.
It's because with your beats, too, you like it kind of puts you through a rabbit hole, too. And as a producer, I'm wondering who you look up to.
Man, I look up to a lot of people. First and foremost, you know, my family, my father, you know what I'm saying? My mother, my father, my stepmother. You know, that's the foundation right there. I look up to, as far as producers go, I look up to cats like Jake Wine, Dave Dilla, Dr. Dre, Battle Cat, Alchemist.
Battle Cat.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Like, that was... I grew up listening to a lot of Battle Cat shit in middle school. Because, you know, Eastsiders and all that shit. That shit was big. That shit was big in my region, man. So shout out to him. Pete Rock, Primo. Pretty much anybody that was dope, man, I looked up to. You know what I mean? Just Blaze. I mean, I could go on, man. But it's like, I look up to anybody... that was dope, that was making a living off of what they love.
When you were a kid looking up the inliners before you wanted to do producing, like, when you were reading these names or anything like that, like, did you know, like, yo, like, these guys are making all of these different records out there, or you just thought, like, they just produced for that one album? Because remember, you're just getting into music when you're first finding it.
Right. I discovered that they were producing all this music. I'm saying, like, I knew Primo was doing Gangstar, but I didn't know he did So Ghetto by Jay-Z. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
At that time. But, like, now I know pretty much all his work around that time.
Yeah, because you went back and did your homework, too.
Yeah, yeah, man. It's I nerd out about this kind of shit, man. Like, I truly enjoy just, you know, reading credits and just seeing who did what. You know what I mean?
You know, actually, I do too. Like, I'm a big rap nerd on that. Actually, an album, and he appeared on the show, OC Jewels. That album's out of print, and I was reading the inliners for that album, and there's phone numbers and everything still on that. I was like, yeah, I'm framing this album.
Wow. That's a classic right there, man.
So, what's a classic album that you will always go back and reopen the liner notes? That's what the question was leading on to.
That's a great question, man. Oh, man. I would have to say The Blueprint's one of them. Oh, by Jay-Z.
Classic.
You know, I go beyond, like, I go beyond, like, who produced it, but I look at the songwriters as well. I look at what sampled. Like, I look at who recorded it. You know what I'm saying? Where it was recorded.
Because it interests
and reason, yeah, Reasonable Doubt's another one of those. Because, like, a lot of those producers on Reasonable Doubt, like, they weren't super well-known at that time. Yeah. Besides Primo.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, like, nobody heard of Ski until that album dropped, and then he did Camp Low. Now everybody's heard of Ski.
Yeah, the Camp Low album was classic. And he dropped a Ski beat. Like, he just goes by Ski now, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think he's always been Ski, man. But, like, I think he went by Ski Beats at one point. I don't know. I can't remember.
Yeah, me neither. But I remember, like, somebody said Ski Beats, and I was like, no, man, I think it's Ski you're talking about, my guy.
Yeah, Ski's the man. Man, he made one of my favorite beats ever, Dead President.
Oh, so that, like, the very, like, because I noticed two versions of that, too. But, like, did you like the other one that you did that they never released, Dead President's 3, or would you always prefer the original one?
I mean, I'm always going to prefer the original one just because I have so many memories and emotions connected to that. But Dead President's 3 was fire, too. Like, I think Young Guru did that one, right?
Yeah, I believe so, too. And they should have released that.
Oh, yeah, they definitely should have. But the first one, the original one, that's always going to be the one for me because, like, Jay was kicking so much game in that second verse. That second verse was ridiculous. Like, just gem after gem after gem. And I think he was breaking it down on, what was it, Streets Is Watching?
Yeah.
Was it Streets Is Watching?
Yeah,
it was Streets Is Watching.
Yes, I have it on DVD.
He was breaking that down. I'm like, oh man. Some of those I didn't really catch. You know what I'm saying? When I first listened to that,
and like when you first like, it's like when you said you didn't catch it when you first listened to it too. Like, does that ever still blow your mind when you go back and listen to like an Only Built by Cuban Lynx, and then you kind of understand the lingo more as you got older? It's like, wow, I had no idea what these guys were talking about back then, but now I understand everything.
Yo, when I looked up what Knowledge God meant, I'm like, yo, that's crazy. Yo, what was it? It was like a kilogram, I think. I think it was like kilo. I think what he meant by knowledge guy was kilo.
Yeah, and they were calling like Clarks, like the shoes and like cupcakes and like, because that whole Wu-Tang manual, that's what actually I had to buy to get that, because like I wanted to know like, what's knowledge guard? You know, what's word is born? You know, what's a biscuit?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I knew what some of those were. Like, I knew that was some, like, 5% of shit, which, you know, I still don't fully understand. But, like, knowledge, when I found out what they meant by knowledge, God, I'm like, yo, all right, this is kind of crazy. This is some code speak right here.
Yeah. It's something they and like in like 25 years, like I and I believe that this is true. In 25 years, Harvard or like universities are going to be breaking down these kind of albums in language classes. Like, this is what people can create, and then like they'll break it all down.
Oh, definitely. I think they're already doing that.
Yeah, they did it for Illmatic.
Just now starting. Yeah, man. Nah, they're already doing it. I think Duke University is, I think they got a class on that, I think. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I remember seeing something. They were, a university was had a class on classic hip-hop albums, and, sorry, Kendrick, Good Kid, Mad City. There we go.
Yeah. Was it Good Kid, Mad City or To Pimp a Butterfly?
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, it was To Pimp a Butterfly, my bad.
Oh, yeah, nah, that's all good. But yeah, it was definitely To Pimp a Butterfly. I remember seeing an article on that.
Yeah, because that album got so much accolades, too. Yeah, you're definitely right, it is To Pimp a Butterfly.
Yeah, I mean, that was the one, I mean, that was the album that just catapulted Kendrick into, like, superstar status.
You know,
that was the one.
I believe that one of these days, and they're going to do that on for Room 39. Because there's codes behind that album, too, when I interviewed Ty Ferris. I was curious about that album, too. And when he told me what that meant, I went on a rabbit hole on that.
Oh, dude. As soon as he came up with that name, I think it was his man Ray Koza that came up with the name. Like, as soon as he explained it to me, I'm like, I went down a rabbit hole myself.
that's where I was going with this. I'm like, that's what I was going to ask. I'm like, so you, we won't get into everything about that, but you definitely went back and researched, because you could tell in the samples and the stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. I looked at the theme of that. I'm like, you know what? We're going right along this theme, sonically. So I'm like, you know what? Let's just keep doing this.
For somebody who, because like you said, you're the only one who I ever heard from Portland before, and I love going to different regions and just like looking up artists and like just vibing to like their lingo and how they make their music. Is there anybody that you can put me on to? So like maybe one day down the line, I was like, you know, Chalk, put me on to your music.
Yeah, as far as Portland dudes?
Yes, yeah, I got to keep local, Portland. All
right, so I'm gonna start with the legends, okay? You know, these two names. You got the Lifesavers. They were signed to Quantum Records.
Okay.
And this guy, Cool Nuts.
Okay.
Cool Nuts is definitely he's a leader in this city. And then, you know, the Lifesavers, they were on Quantum. They did some music for a Ford commercial, I want to say. I think it was Ford. Or GM or something, and that kind of got them some shine as well. As far as cats, like in this generation right now, yeah. You know who Aminé is?
Say that one more time.
Do you know who Aminé is?
Does she have a record with Kid Vicious and Torre?
No, Aminé. He did a song called Caroline. It was like all over the radio.
Oh no, I did not hear.
Oh yeah, he's like. He was like a XXL freshman 10. Like, he's all over the radio. Like, he's a superstar. Like, he's a star, for real. He's from Portland.
Okay, I'm going to have to tap in.
Definitely. He's like, you know, pop rap, fun pop rap and all that. Now, his cats that I listen to out here, there's a guy named Dante Thomas. Dante Thomas is really dope. He runs with this guy named Boca, B-O-C-H-A. Also really dope. And there's this girl named Wynn. She actually went viral a couple times because she's a white girl that's rapping. Oh. But if you look past that, if you look past all that shit about her, yo, you know.
Like shorty dope.
Sex aside, race aside, she's really fucking dope. Like. I'll put her against anybody. She's really fucking dope, and she's about to be a superstar.
Okay. I'm going to have to tap into her, too. My music. Let's get that straight, people. I'm going to listen to her music when I say tap in.
Definitely. We say tap in all the time over here.
All right, well, yeah, because I said that the other day, and somebody's like, you're going to bane shorty? I'm like, no, man. I'm like, I'm going to listen to the music.
Yeah, man. Some people just don't get the West Coast slang. That's some West Coast shit. Saying,
exactly. Well, at least, I'm glad you get it too. But yeah, try explain and try having somebody tell you like you can bane shorty out. I'm like, no, man, no.
yeah, man.
So, for any artist that locally, who did you produce for, or did you produce for some of those artists that you named off?
I produced for most of them, besides there's another guy actually named Mike Capes. Also really fucking dope. I got some more work with this guy coming out soon. I did a song with him called Black Pearls. My man Tony Ozier did some things on the production. He co-produced it. Mike Capes, he's definitely one of Portland's like lyricists. Like he's got a sharp sword when it comes to bars, man.
All right. Well, all those names that you said too, I wrote them all down, so I'm gonna tap into them later on this week.
Oh, dope. Yeah, let me know how you feel about them, man.
Yeah, because like I said, I love going to like each region and just like finding like dope, unique artists because like you just never know like what you can find.
Oh, definitely, man. Like, definitely. Like, I found there's this guy from the Bronx that I'm working with right now named Ricky Mapes. He only had like 800 followers at the time, pretty much on all platforms. My manager actually plugged me with him because he linked up with his manager through this guy named Amir Abbasi. You know Amir Abbasi?
No, I don't, sir.
You know, he was Freeway's manager.
Okay. I'm not too big on knowing who managers are, too, yet. I'm still just getting used to that.
Yeah, this dude Amir, he's definitely a legend out here. He's definitely somebody a lot of people look up to as far as the industry goes. But yeah, he linked Ricky's manager with my manager. And then, you know, we get a link to Ricky's music. I'm blown away. This dude has crazy ideas visually and musically. Like, this dude is dope. He needs to be out there. Like, this dude got it, right? Lo and behold, we're working on a project.
Okay. Do you have your own label?
I'm working on that one day.
I was just going to ask because you're working with a lot of artists too who are just coming up to you. I'm just wondering too, like, is that the goal to have a label in the long run?
I would love to have one. I definitely would, man. Like, that'd be a lifelong goal right there.
And would you focus on other genres besides hip-hop, or would you say hip-hop would be your main act?
Hip-hop would probably be my main act, but I might branch out into something. I haven't really thought of that too much, really.
Yeah, because I noticed that your beats, too, and, like, some of your beats, when I heard them, I'm like, wow, this guy can produce for, like, other genres, too, outside of hip-hop. Like, I can see you producing for Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh, wow. You really think so?
Yeah, man. That North Korea crack rocks of Ozzy saying over that? Whew. I'm big on Ozzy, too.
I love Ozzy, man. I love, you know, classic rock, soul, and all that, man. Like, I listen to everything, man.
Because, like, I'm very big on talent, too, and, like, you definitely got it, too. So I just wanted to tell you, like, I believe that you can work for outside of other genres than hip-hop.
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. Thank you, man. That's definitely going to happen, man. I will tell you that much.
Oh, definitely. I'm definitely paying attention now, too. Room 39, definitely. Like, I was like, okay, this guy right here, I got to listen to these. I got to listen to these beats every day.
Oh, man, I appreciate that, man. Thank you for tuning in, man.
All right, anytime, man. Like I said, I gotta give love to people who actually, you know, making unique talent and have, like, you know, dope intentions out there, you know, because, like, you're real. Not that much people are.
Hey, man. Hey, I just do what I can, man. I do what I can, and, you know, everything else will fall into place, man. Just, you know, be a genuine person. Do the best you can. Everything else will fall.
That's definitely what I believe, too. And I believe that's the perfect segue into the last question I ask all my guests, too. Do you have any words for somebody in a dark place trying to see the light?
Say say that again? I couldn't hear that one.
Oh, sorry. Do you have any words for somebody in a dark place trying to see the light?
I've been there. So what I will say to anybody in that situation is everything's going to be okay. Run your own race. Like, not everything has to happen before you're 30. You know what I'm saying? Like, 30 is the new 20, like Jay-Z would say, you know? Like, yeah. I'd be in that dark place myself. But then, you know, as soon as I get in that dark place, I start counting my blessings, you know, seeing what I have and what I have done. And I have to realize that I'm thankful for all that. And there's a reason why I'm here in this world today.
That's a good answer, too. Like, that's a really good answer. I don't think anyone ever said count on your blessings when I asked them that.
Yeah, definitely, man. Definitely. Just, you know, ask yourself, what are you thankful for? You know what I'm saying? Like, ask yourself that question. And you will instantly feel better about yourself. Like, don't have this mindset where it's like, oh, I can't do this, or maybe I can do this. Nah, I will do this. This is going to happen one way or another. Don't know how long it's going to, I don't know how long it's going to be, but it's going to happen.
Because you're speaking it into existence.
Have to. You have to. Write it into existence, speak it into existence. Do whatever you can just to put it into existence. Like, another way to, you know, get yourself out of a dark space is, you know, plan something. You know, something, you know what I'm saying? Something that makes you productive. Like, that can lead to another thing of being productive. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It could branch out at.
Definitely, man, definitely. Once you start with one productive thing in the morning, that's going to lead to another. It's going to be a snowball effect.
And that's the first thing you got to do when you wake up, is feed your mind positivity in the morning.
Definitely, man. Definitely. Say you can do these things. Say that, oh yeah, this is going to get done today.
And it will. With that being said, too, I think that's a perfect way to end this episode with this classic interview. I really enjoyed this interview, by the way, sir.
Oh, man. You know what? I enjoyed doing this podcast, man.
I appreciate that, sir, my G. Is there anything that you like to plug in before we let you go?
All right. So, my socials is IamTrox on everything, Twitter, Instagram, all of that. Trox on Facebook. You can add me on Facebook. Trox Diesel. Actually, no, I'm not Trox Diesel on SoundCloud anymore. It's just Trox now. Trox on SoundCloud. I do have an announcement to make. I got an instrumental tape, an instrumental album coming out called Late 80s Baby. It's going to be released on Fresh Selects very soon. I don't have a date yet, but it's coming out very soon.
Oh, I'm definitely tap into and cop that. I always cop my guest albums.
My man, I appreciate you, man.
I appreciate you, sir. That being said, that's another classic episode from the Desk of Low featuring my guy, Trox. My guy.
My man, I appreciate you. Thank you for having me, man.
Appreciate you, too.